We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, ViewRail,
America's leading manufacturer of floating stairs and modern cable glass railings.
They handle every part of the process, from design, engineering, manufacturing, delivery, all the way to installation.
There is a 10-year structural and finish warranty on all products installed by a ViewRail certified technician.
Nearly all components are made in-house, giving you more control over style, material, finishes, budget, and timeline.
All products are designed as a modular, integrated system that are engineered for easy installation. It's like putting together an erector set.
Thanks so much again, ViewRail, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. We're here with Jeremy Mastretta, owner of New Age Artisans, which is really cool. You do the Aggregate podcast. You have artisans from all over the world every week. What am I missing? How can you introduce yourself better than I did?
Well, I mean, I think that sums it up pretty well. I mean, okay. That's kind of like tip of the iceberg. If you want to kind of go a little deeper, we could go subarctic if you want.
Let's do it.
Where it all started.
Sure.
I was born and raised in Madison, Connecticut. Grew up restoring houses. Worked for a couple painting contractors. So I worked on colonial houses. And, 15, 16, 17, I was the guy out there with the belt sander just sanding down these clapboards. And when I was 18, I moved to Montana, went out there a few times on a family trip, as we were talking about earlier, and just fell in love with Montana, fell in love with the landscape, fell in love with fishing and hunting and just the entire mentality out there. Went to college at Montana State University, earned a degree in English literature.
That's really making its use right now.
It is. English literature. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 20-something years later, it's finally come around. And it's funny because people would always say that. They'd be like, well, what are you doing with your literature degree? I'm communicating.
Well, true. Yeah.
And I was very upset with the per word payment of some of the articles that I was writing. Yeah. And I realized very quickly that this was not a way that I was going to be able to make money. And but when I was 22, my parents just went, you're done. Figure it out. So I had to figure it out.
Trial by fire.
Yeah. You're done. We've paid for college. We've done our work. You go figure it out. And I spent a long time kind of trying to figure it out. One of the ways in which I was attempting to figure it out was utilizing the skills of being 18 years old and painting. So I started a painting company. And let's see, I was 22, 23 years old, and I had all these employees. I had all these contractors coming at me with these timelines. I was involved in jobs where the architecture was way over my head. I was still like 22, 23 years old, trying to figure out life,
Over your head how?
Literally, it was.
Yeah, literally over my head. Yeah, and also like, I didn't understand like building in general. I was very one-track mind. Like my job is to sand clapboard. My job is to paint board. But when people start using terms like fascia and soffit and rake and baseboard and riglet and reveal and things that I just had no idea what they were talking about. And I just had to like fake it till you make it kind of thing. And slowly but surely, I started to understand what they were talking about. And I started to understand the flow of the job site and started to understand, just these houses and what we're working on and just like how they have these, like each house has its own vibe to it. And I started to really understand that and really respect that. By the time I was 23, realized that I did not like painting, which was really a bad epiphany to have at 23 years old when you're broke. You have all your friends out there they're doing everything fun. Everyone's skiing and hunting, fishing, going on river trips, going on concerts and partying.
Yeah, payrolls.
Yeah, and I'm like, I want to do that too, but like, I don't have a trust fund. Let me pretend. And it was first world problem, but it was a problem.
It's a hard thing to fake.
Yeah.
Fake exactly. Like you got a trust fund.
Yeah. And I just really wanted something different. I knew that, painting wasn't for me. It was, I felt like it was pretty bad for the mind, bad for the body, bad for the lungs. I was consistently waiting for drywallers to come fix things. And I just felt like there was just more out there for me. So I'd learned drywall as well. And one day we were in a house and it was a remodel. It was a building very, very similar to this. And there was color integrated plaster And they said, do you see this? Do you think you could fix it? Because they had to do this little patch in the wall. I said, gosh, I don't know. So I kind of investigated what the plaster was, and I just spent a week or so kind of figuring it out. And as I was fixing it, there were just these moments of realization that two negatives, painting and drywall, in my world were actually now making a positive. I really liked the dexterity of the tools. I had a lot of color knowledge from painting and mixing colors in the past. And everything just kind of clicked at the same time. Mm-hmm. And there were moments before that. And then after I finished that wall, it was moments after.
How long ago was that?
Gosh, that was probably 20 years ago. Yeah, 22 years ago, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. And I just, ever since then, it was like, I'm a plasterer. This is what I will be doing. And we pushed and pushed and pushed for 20 something years, spreading a myriad of plasters. We would spread gypsum plaster. We would spread clay plaster. We'd spread lime plaster, and we'd spread cementitious plaster as well. And it just, something that in turn just filled me up.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to the point now where we're now manufacturing our own blends.
Right.
We are so busy with the amount of work that we are doing. Mm-hmm. People have been calling us from all over the world trying to figure out our techniques. So I thought I would be remiss in my duties to not take the success and the learning curves that we've learned and not put it out there to the world. So we actually have an educational platform as well.
The Plaster Portal.
The Plaster Portal.
Yes. Yeah,
you've done your homework.
Yeah, man. It's an overgrade bio. I'd give it a read.
Yeah. Yeah.
We both did.
Yeah. So we have something called the Plaster Portal, and it's a place, and it's an online hub for people to come, become subscribers. And for $75 a year, there's a baseline subscription that gets the subscriber access to our plaster blends. And then it gives tips and tricks and basically little insights into things that folks wouldn't normally get outside of the world of plaster. I mean, you can sit there and scroll and scroll and scroll, and there's no bottom to the internet. You're just going to keep on going, trying to kind of patch together something that will work for you.
So did you have any roots back to your Connecticut growing up? I know Latham Plaster is a big part of historic building. There's, you know, really cool historic homes, especially in the Northeast, that use a lot of that. Were you ever drawn back over there?
Yeah.
I know you say you do work all over.
Yeah.
What does that even look like?
So, you know, we were doing some contract work for some other manufacturers. If there was ever a warranty, we would, you know, be flown back. So I did spend a decent amount of time back on the East Coast working on some plaster homes. I think with Latham Plaster, though, most of what I did, some very formidable times were during the recession. And there were, you know, Montana is 1890, it became a state, or actually 1889, but, you know, the late 1800s is when everything was built, and everything was all horsehair and lime plaster, and there was lath. And a lot of people weren't really, they're quite frugal in 2008, 2009, 2010.
Definitely.
For good reason. And but they still wanted to get the work done on their house. So we were, you know, doing some patches, and we'd basically like go in, and if there was a way to save the lath, we would try to save the lath, and then we would just do a veneer coat over the top of all of this lath and plaster.
So tell us about what does your operation look like now? Are you still hands-on doing the work, or are you running the company?
That's a great question, and it's a question I get often. My job at New Age Artisans is very simple. My job is to do whatever it takes to keep it rolling. And sometimes that means answering the phone, helping out Kelly in the office, who is our manager and our controller. She's the greatest. But sometimes she gets a little overwhelmed. I need to help. Sometimes it's helping out MK, doing the color matches. Sometimes the crew, we've got 15 employees, and sometimes the crew is a little bit underwater. Sometimes the designer needs to have a meeting. Sometimes I need to help Vincent doing some takeoffs for upcoming jobs. Literally whatever it takes.
So New Age Artisans is your subcontractor.
Yes.
Working for builders and designers, mainly in Bozeman or all over the country?
Mainly in Bozeman.
Yeah.
However, since we've started manufacturing our own blends, our work and our philosophy and our plaster is now kind of traveling to other places. So we sell a lot to Vermont. We sell a lot to Colorado. Basically anywhere where there's folks with, you know, kind of this desire to spice up their walls, our plaster is starting to get specced in there. And in turn, we're starting to work with these designers and these contractors there.
So what is your own blend kind of bring to the picture? I'm really new to the plaster scene. I can identify whenever a wall has had lath and plaster put on it because of the little lines and then the plaster, you know? So that's about all I know. You're talking about lime plaster. You're talking about all these different bases of plaster. What is kind of the difference in all of those? Is it availability to the region, or is it more just like you'd use one for this climate, or you'd use one? I don't know.
Yeah, great question. Great question. Plaster is one of, I think, the oldest terms. Mm-hmm. And plaster can be one of, I think, four things. It can be clay, it can be lime, it can be gypsum, or it can be cement. And plaster as a product, and then there's plaster as a process as well. So it's words that very much ebb and flow amongst each other.
Right.
And what may be considered plaster one place in the world might not be considered plaster another place in the world. So there's plaster cornices, there's plaster sculpture, there's veneer plaster over drywall, there's lath and plaster. It's this ubiquitous term, and what it means to somebody one place might not mean to somebody in another place.
Right.
However, our definition of plaster is color integrated veneer over drywall.
Okay.
There are all sorts of ways to get that look and that effect. But essentially, it's color integrated mud that gets troweled over a hard, stable surface. And you look at the wall and it's very three-dimensional. You touch it and it's completely smooth. The wall has depth, it has movement, and it is just something that's just takes it up a notch from traditional paint.
What is the cost difference? So if I'm doing a drywall house and they wanted, you know, splatter drag, and then, or they wanted, you know, level five smooth, and then they wanted your product. I mean, is it?
Yeah, I would say on average, it's probably about a third more to do plaster, depending on where you live.
Over splatter drag or over like level five?
Over level three with our muds. So a level five is, you know, it's paint grade. Wall is just perfectly immaculate. It's perfectly smooth. You obviously can do plaster over the top of that. However, the only reason you'd want to prep a wall to level five would be for actually like a very, very thin veneer plaster, like super, super thin, like a 16th. Our plaster has a larger aggregate in it for our base coat. So we're able to span any undulations in the wall with just a traditional level three finish. So you save, there's some cost savings there on the prep, and that saving can get thrown into.
So you said you're how much more over?
I think probably a third, 33% more, but I tell everyone 100% cooler.
And there's no paint at the end of it because the plaster itself is color integrated plaster. So that is essentially your paint coat.
Correct. Yeah. Now there's sealers and waxes that can go on that are just, you know, topical that can go over the top of it. But
does that help the plaster last longer? Or
it's a common question. I would say it'll help from a durability standpoint. Mm-hmm. However, if there's any sort of repairs with a sealer or a wax on it, it can be quite a challenge to repair it.
Yeah.
In fact, like sometimes you might be redoing the entire wall, inside corner to inside corner.
The average thickness is about an eighth.
Yeah, an eighth. You know, some of them, depending on, you know, heavy aggregates can go to 3/16 or so. Mm-hmm. Some of our blends, we do some shower lime plaster finishes in showers, and those are about a quarter of an inch.
And then where's Venetian plaster in this world?
Venetian plaster, to me, is again like this ubiquitous, all-encompassing term that gets used and gets thrown around. I mean, Venetian plaster stemmed from Italy, from Venice, and it was a very fine lime putty with marble dust as the aggregate, and it was troweled on. It's immaculate. It's beautiful. If you go to Venice and you see it, there is no look that can compare to that unless you are looking at authentic Venetian plaster. Mm-hmm. Now that look got taken back to the United States, and it's kind of been like Vegasified, where it's heavy trowel strokes, really glossy, heavy burnishing. Like it looks like a strip mall nail salon sometimes when you walk in there. So much gloss. And you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
So sometimes when people say the term Venetian plaster, I duck a little bit, only because I feel like there's some preconceived notions that that is what Venetian plaster is.
And they may not necessarily do it right.
Correct.
Like they may mix the right aggregate, but their technique and actually applying it is wrong, or just they may not mix the right combination of
things. I mean, it could be so many things that, that could occur with Venetian plaster. Yeah. They may have bought it from a big box store and it's basically just like watered down, you know, or thicker paint that is just troweled on and put on with a 6-inch drywall knife. We're using actually legitimate Hawk hold the material and a trowel to put it up.
One of the reasons we wanted to get you on the show is you care about the same thing we do about craft and about artisanship, right? Just in the trades and stuff like that. What is, through your portal, what kind of success stories are you having helping guys become artisans, become better at what they do, make more money, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. I think for us, my plight in the world of business is to leave a lasting legacy. We are very, very fortunate to have an incredible amount of wealth where we work. Get to work on the nicest homes literally in the world. People really want our material on the wall. I felt remiss in my duties to not take the stable platform that we've created and leave a door open for folks to come in. Because right now what I'm seeing is a tremendous amount of people leaving the trade, and I'm seeing not a lot of people entering the doors of the trade.
By leaving the trade, do you mean aging out?
Aging out or deciding like, this is too much for me. This is like, this is not.
I can't make the money. I can't make the living.
Yeah, I can't staff
cheap.
I can't staff a crew. I can't pay the crew what they need to, you know, afford the cost of living.
Right.
And I'm seeing that, and it's really started to happen over the last 24 months or so, where there's been less and less people. There's so much work. There's so much wealth, and the middle class is just shrinking. These blue collar jobs, people are either dropping to a lower socioeconomic status, or they're ascending so high that they've made it and they don't need to really work anymore. And they're going to a tech job or something, and, you know, they're making passive income mailbox money, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. I'm just at the point now where I feel like if we don't cultivate that and we don't foster a new beginning in the world and allow entry for these folks to come in, that these arts are going to die. And we have had people that are drywallers, people that are painters, people that would never, ever given the access to this world of plaster because the learning curve's too hard. And I feel like it's my duty to open up the doors for that. And we actually have a series on our YouTube channel called Success Stories. And we've got this awesome story of this drywaller named Avery. Avery Weaver's his name. And he came to me and he was beat down. He was cooked. He couldn't make any money. And he said, I think this is my last ditch effort. And we opened the doors to him, and now he's doing quite well for himself in the world of plaster. Yeah, it's a little bit of a soapbox theory of mine. You know, I kind of stand up and yell to the crowd, but I just feel like I've been given this opportunity, and I've had this kind of arc in my life, and I just thought, I don't know what I have to lose, so I'm going to go for it, and we're going to just kind of change the paradigm of thought.
The reality of the trades today is that you've got production building, which is 90% of the houses being built today, if not more. And then you have the high end. And it seems like there's obviously a middle ground there, middle area. But, you know, you're doing in plaster what we're trying to do in millwork, right? We're looking to the past. We're practicing the old ways of doing things. We're obviously able to make a living. And I'm encouraging, I mean, guys like Richard, who were stuck in that world of working for, you know,
production side.
Yeah, he was working for homeowners though, which was an interesting little piece of it that he had. But you know, now he's learned some of these skills and some of these things, and I think he's happier now. I mean, it feels like, I mean, if we're talking to these guys that watch our show and listen to this podcast, be careful that you don't get sucked into that world of being, you know, commodity price, you know, how much can you run trim for in my house? $1.25. This guy will do it for $1.15. You know, you either do that or you're not gonna, you know, can't do it. And it's hard. I think it's hard for craftsmen and tradesmen, right, to find their place. I think it's interesting Right. I mean, that's kind of what you're providing is a way into a higher end, you know, trade.
Yes. Way into a higher end trade. And then ultimately a way in which folks can gain the knowledge and the accessibility to do things, yeah, that they would never have ever had. And mm-hmm. then in turn, my thought is we'll bring so many people in the door into this room of plaster mm-hmm. that they'll be able, it'll just be able to be offered everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yes. And of course it's like somewhat selfish because yes, obviously I'm making my own plaster blends and my goal right. is to sell it. But more than anything, you know, we kind of just want to sell our philosophy, sell our way of thinking. It's interesting mentioning, you know, bringing down the cost because mm-hmm. somebody said to me one time, what you should figure out how to do is not how much you can charge for something, but how little you can charge for it. And then you'll have all the work in the world. And I know that that's like a crazy fine line mm-hmm. without question, but that has kind of resonated with me, like this whole economy of scale mm-hmm. situation where, you know, there's pricing that's involved. And say you do 1,000 square feet of veneer plaster over drywall,
right?
You know, that's going to be crazy expensive. It's going to be, you know, $15-$20 a square foot.
Right.
Whereas if you're doing 10,000 square feet, you can almost slice that in half.
Right.
And you're still making these big lump sums of money. So again, it's like taking everything with a grain of salt of what you can charge. Mm-hmm. And also on top of it, what's your value?
What's the most profitable side of your business? The artisan builders or the mixing and selling the plaster?
Oh, 100% installation.
Yeah.
100% mm. without question. If yeah. I was a smart man, I mean, if any sort of economist would look under the hood yeah. of our QuickBooks account, they'd be like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
And I tell them, well, duh. We all already know that, yeah. but I'm not stopping. My thought on that is we're in a very insulated economy mm-hmm. and I look out years and years into the future and we've got continued work. We've got these relationships with these giant builders mm-hmm. that are doing like, I mean, these guys are building spaceships, like rocket ships. It's unbelievable for the Jeff Bezos, for the mm-hmm. Elon Musks, and all their houses are plaster. And we're their contractor, mm-hmm. which is beautiful and it's amazing. But I thought like, okay, we're going to finish life. We're going to be done. There's no pocket on the last shirt. Mm-hmm. We're not bringing any money with us. Like, what are we going to leave here?
Right.
And now that I've got kids of my own, you know, and a wife that shares the same philosophy as I do, thought, well, let's take something. Let's make something beautiful that's a lasting legacy. Mm-hmm. And yes, 100% making the money and feeding everyone in my company and my family. Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. It's 100% contracting, but the manufacturing is kind of where I would like to move it to. And I've told everyone that works for me, we're going to continue to do this contracting as long as you guys are willing to show up and put material on the wall.
Mm-hmm. I know a couple people up in Bozeman and they're wealthy and have that kind of stuff. Could you have started this business, done this work in, you know, another place in Montana, or is Bozeman a unique pocket? Because I'll talk to, like, if you want to start a high-end woodworking company, mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to be in LA and New York, right, then DC, I mean, big cities, you probably are going to do great and have a big runway in front of you. Fort Worth is, you know, growing and better. Dallas is a better market than Fort Worth. There's some cities, like if I was in Waco, not to kick Waco or anything, but a smaller city that didn't have the sophistication, I don't know if I could build the same business mm-hmm. that we've got here. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think about it often. I would honestly say that I don't think that the life that I live and the capacity that we have and our ability to just churn material and churn products would exist if I myself did not live in Bozeman. 2006, 2007, right with the inception of social media, the throngs of people that started to move to that town mm-hmm. and the wealth that was occurring. It was unfathomable and it keeps going. So again, we have this insulated market. We've got this bed that mm-hmm. we can just comfortably sleep on knowing that we're gonna live to fight another day. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you are, I'll just think of a random place. Mm-hmm. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I can't imagine many people have veneer plaster in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but there's still a small niche amount of people that would likely want it.
Yeah.
And my thought is, why don't we make this available for a contractor in Tulsa, Oklahoma? A designer is going to call us up. They're going to Google plaster and they're going to see new age artisans specializing in old world plastering techniques. They're going to realize we've got an online portal where folks can come and they're going to realize that they can enter our little cocoon of safety and we're going to take care of them. And in turn, we're going to sell them some plaster.
Yeah.
And in turn, they're going to sell the next person plaster. And then maybe we can start to kind of like spread this.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
I think that's true. And I think if you take you in Tulsa, maybe you don't have a 15-man crew, you have a 5-man crew, but you can still carve out a niche there. Your runway isn't as wide, maybe.
Yeah.
But I think the opportunity still, I think what I'm encouraging people to do, and if you guys are out there kind of wondering how you grow your business and build a business, I think part of it is you do have to be in the right place.
Yes.
And it's, I don't know whether it's a 10% piece or an 80% piece, but I couldn't have built Hull, especially with the historic stuff, you know, in some parts of the country, they just don't care. And so I don't know what that piece is, but it's something.
Part of that is not, you can't do it. Part of it is you can't do it to the scale that
right.
you have done.
No, that's right.
What we're saying is there are still people out there in these smaller towns, you know, Paris, Texas, great example. There might be 20 people there who really want to do this. You can work with those 20 people, but you're going to have a 2-man, 3-man crew that you're doing that with, not a 40-man, 15-man, whatever it is.
I was looking for a DM some guy just sent me, I think this morning, saying, how do I get out of the rut that I'm in? How do I get better, right? And so I like what you're doing because you are basically for the drywall painter out there who wants to break out of that rut or that mold that they're in where they're working for a dollar a foot and just, you know, and fighting that. The high end was the other part of the team, being where you are, but going after the higher end is what I'm encouraging most people to do because it is where you can make money. You're not a commodity, and you are practicing old world techniques. And if we're going to hold on to, you know, the trades, the history that we've got behind the building traditions, it happens in the high end. It doesn't happen in the low end.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, you did mention the old world techniques that you're talking about, and you were talking about how the install part is the more lucrative side of your company. And I guess that just makes me think, like, is there, you know, a right way and a wrong way to install plaster? That might be a super ignorant question, but...
No, not ignorant at all.
I'm assuming y'all are doing it just better because of the techniques that you're using, just using context clues there.
Yeah, I would say the old cliched statement, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's going to work, there's some fundamental kind of beacons of installation success that occur throughout an installation, and you need to know how the wall needs to be prepped. You need to know how the plaster is going to adhere to the wall, and you need to know what your finish coat's going to look like. And as long as you are sticking to those basic rules of installation, plaster is going to adhere to the wall, and there's tips and tricks that you can learn along the way.
Yeah.
There's really no right way or wrong way in a veneer technique. If you're doing something crazy specialized, like a veneer Tadillac finish, which
what is that?
So it's a ancient Moroccan technique that's been around for thousands of years, and it's an integration of olive oil soap into a curing lime plaster at its roots. And if you miss your timing, the wall's not gonna repel water the way it needs to.
So it's about when you add the olive oil soap to the lime.
It's the slaking time, right?
Well, there's the slaking time in which you're making the lime, but then there's actually while the material is up on the wall and you're integrating the olive oil soap into the curing lime plaster. If you miss that timing, that window, if you go too soon, the wall's gonna dust. If you go too late, it's not gonna accept the moisture or accept the soap, and the moisture's not gonna integrate into the wall, and you're gonna have a giant problem on your hands. So that there is that when these are like elevated plaster techniques that occur throughout the world.
Wow.
So with those, you want to get your timing right. With a gypsum plaster, United States Gypsum, they make Imperial Base, they make Imperial Finish. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable products.
Yeah.
45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
You can slow her down. You can speed it up with, you know, catalysts and retarders. If you miss your timing on those, you're having a horrible day. Like the worst day ever. Yeah.
So if I'm a drywall guy, painter somewhere listening to this, and I says, well, maybe I should try that. What's the learning curve? How long will it take them to get good at this where they can start making money?
Yeah, proficiency. I would say really a couple weeks, as long as you understand the components of it. Understand that, you know, you have to have a primary bonder over the surface. You have to be able to make sure your plaster is going to stick on the wall. Then you have to make sure that...
What's a primary bonder, I guess?
Oh, so it's... plaster will adhere to the wall in a couple different ways. Some of it's through a chemical bond and some of it's through a mechanical bond. Ours, with our plaster, it's both mechanical and chemical because we take the aggregate that's in the plaster, which happens to be marble, and then we adhere that with a paint primer to it. So the lime plaster is just adhering to more lime on the wall.
Right.
So that's just a bonder. Imperial plaster, you know, they use like plaster weld, which is, you know, pink or sometimes clear, goes up over the surface. As long as you're understanding the components, you're just going to have the dexterity.
So you say 2 weeks. So if I get your product in the mail, I try it at my own house, right? And it works.
Yep.
I mean, it, pretty fast. I mean, I try it, and you've got how many different finishes? 25?
We've got, I mean, 100? Our finishes that we've got, I mean, we've got a myriad of colors. We can match any color in the world that you give us. The finishes that we have, we've got 4 or 5 finishes. We've got a, you know, a basic blend, which is, you know, a heavy, heavy aggregate, very, very old and rustic looking. We've got a heritage blend, which happens to be the base coat of all of our plasters. We've got a classic blend, which is fine and medium aggregate. You can polish it really smooth, or you can kind of leave it open, a little bit more rustic looking. And then we've got a refined blend, which you can just grind on that wall till it's a sheet of glass and you can brush your teeth in it every morning. I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's cool.
Yeah. I would say 2 weeks to understand the components. Proficiency is a completely different story.
Yeah.
How to be able to work with efficiency, to make money, understand the job site, understand the ebb and flow of the contractors, understand the trades. I mean, that's a lifelong skill.
Sure, no doubt.
That takes forever. But to understand how to have a hawk, have a trowel, scoop the plaster out of the bucket, put it on your hawk, and put it on the wall, I think, honestly, a couple of weeks. I mean, I tell everyone I'm not that smart, and I figured out how to do it. If I can do it, you can do it.
I have another specific plaster question I was asking you before. I think it's better that we saved it for this. What's the difference between plaster and stucco?
Oh, yeah.
And you're giving a great answer, but I think it would be better if everyone heard it.
Better online.
Better online than offline, yeah.
So here's
stucco
my answer.
Stucco is cementitious, right? Not always?
Yeah. It's a colloquial term in my thought. Stucco, in my world, is an exterior product.
Right.
Heavy aggregate, traditionally cementitious, going over either diamond lath on the outside of a home or going over some sort of block construction. Stucco, color integrated. Again, it's kind of like the Venetian plaster term, where it's this broad umbrella that kind of seems to encompass a trade and a product and a process. I think that stucco is an exterior product. Now, there are interior portions of exterior walls in block construction, if you follow me on that, that are spec'd to be coated in stucco as well. And that allows the walls to breathe and, you know, moisture to ebb and flow throughout the home. If you said stucco and you went to Australia or New Zealand or even parts of Europe, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. They call it a render.
Hmm.
You're rendering a wall. You're making a wall. Stucco, to me, in the United States of America, is a exterior product.
Got it.
Now, there's cementitious stucco, and then there's synthetic stuccos that go over the top of a lot of cementitious stuccos as well.
Okay.
And those are all full of polymers, and those get sealed myriad of those.
Okay.
There's, yeah, and then there's EFIS.
What is that?
What does EFIS stand for? Engineered Insulated Foam System, EIFS. Okay. Just pulled that one out of nowhere. And that's basically just this foam that goes up. Mm. The seams get coated with this stuff called Genesis, okay, which is kind of like a thin set material. And then that's going to get a veneer coat over the top, something kind of synthetic. Nice. And you see a lot of office buildings and stuff like that. It's okay. Got these like little dimples.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Where do you think the U.S. is skill-wise? I mean, you're talking about, you know, other parts of the world, as far as craftsmanship, tradesmanship, especially with in your world. I mean, do we have a long way to go to catch up? Are we getting there? What do you think?
I think we're in trouble, is what I think. I think we're losing craftsmen. I think we're losing trades. I think that the internet, as awesome as it be, as it can be, is also a horrible thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's this goal and this desire for instant satisfaction, and Instagram versus reality are two completely different things.
Right.
And I think that there's a disillusion to perceived value that occurs with folks that are entering a trade that for some particular reason think that they may, blanket statement here, so you asked, so I answered. I think that there's a disillusion of how much folks are worth. Mm-hmm. They want to be making $40, $50, $60 an hour, want to be making, you know, $100,000 a year.
Right.
Just entering a trade. Some of that's because that's what the cost of living is. Mm-hmm. Some of that's, they've got this insane drive. And then on top of it, there's, as we were talking about, there's the shrinking of the middle class. Mm-hmm. There's this way in which folks can't quite make it in the trades, so they're forced to do something else. And that's where I think that we're in trouble. I think that there's these pockets of enthusiasm that mm-hmm. are occurring in all of these niche plaster and woodworking and metal. And that's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think as a whole, these are just these little bubbles that are existing throughout an entire industry that I fear is in a little bit of trouble.
I'm less pessimistic, only because I think that the four-year college route is broken mm-hmm. as well. And so I don't think that people necessarily look at the college route and say, well, that's how I'm going to make, you know, as much money as my parents made.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that happens anymore. And the trades is a way, given, I don't know, a few years in it, you can be making 60, 80, 100 as a plumber, electrician, woodworker, things like that. So,
but a distinction.
I do.
Jeremy, you said people expect to make that immediately in the trades versus you're saying after a couple of years.
No, I know. And I understand what you're saying. And I agree. There is that entitlement that is out there with a lot of people that, well, gosh, I'm worth it, right? Yeah, and you're just like, you know, you haven't done anything.
You just got here.
You just got here. Yeah. And so I agree with, I don't disagree with that at all. And I'm only slightly more optimistic than you are because I'm absolutely, we've got problems.
Yeah.
And so it's just a matter of, in my mind, we're, you know, which way is this going to tip? And I think they're, with the right messaging, with podcasts like yours and ours, you know, preaching the fact that craftsmanship is a way to make a living and a fulfilling living, right? And a joyful living. I think there's hope.
There's hope. And there's this beautiful light on what could be kind of a gloomy future.
Yeah.
And again, back to, you know, our portal and our platform and our paradigm, like my thought is to be that light, to be that glimmer of hope mm-hmm. for people. And I feel like if folks want to enter the trades, we will open the doors wide open for them.
This is just something really interesting. I had a friend who was just kind of wayward, didn't really know what he wanted to do with his life. And he saw a billboard that was like, you could be earning X amount as a plumber. And he was like, I'm going to go be a plumber. I don't remember what the dollar amountage was, but it was something like you could be making, it was like $30 an hour. He was like, this is amazing. I'm going to go there. So he went there and the caveat was he had to spend 2 years as an apprentice plumber. Then he was like, yeah, I'm only going to be earning $18 an hour. And then after 2 years, then I'm actually going to be making 30 and then up to, you know, $40, $60 an hour, whatever it was. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And he was like, but I don't really want to do that because that's 2 years. And it's just like, you got to put the work in.
Yeah.
You got to have like the front end. And then just a secondary example of this same kind of phenomenon occurring in a, I guess I should probably start with the question to you guys, two businessmen. We had a a business come visit us at the school that I'm at. And they were timber framers, and they were showing us their business and showing us the cool jobs that they got to work on. And one of the guys was really interested in it in my class. And he asked, you know, how much would you pay someone initially coming in? And I think he was offended by the answer, but what would y'all's entry level pay to be to someone who's, you know, fresh out of a carpentry school or fresh out of a, let's just say, plaster school?
In other words, they have some training.
They have some training, yeah, but they're still new. They've never been to a job site, or maybe they've only been to a couple and done side work here and there.
We're probably starting that person at 18.
18? What about you?
25.
25?
Yep. Mostly because of the cost of living.
Yeah. But-
Yeah. Of where we live, it's, you know, 25 is likely the 18.
Yeah.
Where I live.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the similar answer was given about, he said low 20s was the first, you know, kind of answer. But then I guess the next question, the follow-up question was, how soon does that jump up?
Yeah.
Or how soon can they expect to start?
Well, if the person has skills for us, it's really quick. I mean, after 90 days, we would move him to 22 to 23
if
he was good.
Same with you guys.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And then like what deems a skill is a completely different thing. Somebody might not be very good on the tools, but they're excellent with communication.
Yeah. Mm.
They're excellent with working with the crew. They might be excellent at sweeping up the floor,
which
is going to make the crew go even faster, mixing the mud or cleaning the buckets. Like every single person is a cog in the system, and every single person is going to elevate the crew to success.
That's good to hear. Ben, I hope you're watching. Well, that's really fun. And then I do have another question for you. You showed me a video right before we started. It was really cool. And maybe Austin can overlay some videos of it, but you're working on a project with a bunch of plaster artists from all across the world.
Yes.
And you're going to be putting together, it looks like restoring a mosque.
We're restoring a mosque in Morocco.
Yes.
In April of 2025.
Which looks like an awesome project.
It's an unbelievable project.
But a lot of that work is exterior, I guess is where my question stemmed
from. In the particular video, work was exterior.
Okay.
Now, good thing you said that.
Okay.
Because we were going to be restoring the interior portions of the exterior walls.
Okay.
To their original form, which is tadalact, as we were discussing. Mm-hmm. And it's ancient Moroccan technique where you integrate olive oil soap into the walls. Tadalact has been a term that has now become kind of like the Venetian plaster. It's kind of become the stucco. It's this broad swooping term for anything that lives inside of a shower. The design world has taken hold of it and has just ran with it.
Mm.
So there's all of this tadalact that's getting put up, tadalact, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
All of the bougie designers, all of the high-end homes are getting it. None of the money's going back to Morocco. I visited Morocco in March of 2020, which is a bad time to go to Northern Africa, but we were there. And
why is that a bad time?
Oh, there's this thing called COVID that happened in
2020.
Yeah, perhaps you've heard of it. It was a life altering experience for a moment there.
Yeah.
But
we almost stuck there.
Oh yeah.
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 That's crazy.
Yep. We got out of there, wife and kids and everything. It was
close.
This was close. It was as close as I want to bring it at this portion of my life. I got to see, you know, this whole country and this this whole mentality and these beautiful people and these beautiful buildings. And we were doing tadalact at the time. We came back to the stage, started doing even more. Then the earthquake happened there. And I just felt so bad for this country that was, you know, had these ancient buildings and all this architecture and this art and this history and this culture. And I was like, God, we have to do something. So we're at the point now where all of our money is funneled through this tadalact. These courses that we sell is now going to this foundation called the Atlas Cultural Foundation. So any profits that we are getting, we're throwing back into the Atlas Cultural Foundation. And the thought is that in April, we can raise enough money to go to Morocco to help pay respect to a culture, pay respect to a tradition, and we can have a knowledge exchange with all of these tadalact practitioners around the world that I've become acquainted with. So we've got somebody from India, somebody from Brazil, somebody from the United Kingdom, somebody from Pennsylvania, somebody from New Mexico, and a few of us at New Age Artisans from Montana. And we're all descending upon this beautiful village to work together with the local craftsmen to restore the mosque, to give back to the culture, to give back to the, you know, Very the technique cool. that's given us success in our lives. Right. I feel like if you don't invest back into something that's given you success, all you're doing is just depleting it. And who knows what we're going to learn? Mm-hmm. You know, you get all these people from around the world.
You'll learn something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to have some local craftsmen and all sorts of other stuff, which is, that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terribly fun. And it's just, you know, life's just this crazy work in progress. Yeah. And, you know, we just got to this point and I thought, we need to do this.
Yeah. That sounds super
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being a guest. This was
my pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Yeah. Yeah. This has been.
I have one more question.
Oh, yeah. Hit me up.
Sorry. It's my last one. Okay. This might be a really bad question to ask you, but if I'm like drilling into a plaster wall to hang a photo, I know I'm destroying the work that you've just done, but is there a right way to do it? Is it a picture rail? Don't drill into the wall, drill into the ceiling. I don't know.
Well, you're going to drill into our plaster, veneer plaster over drywall, or you're going to drill into plaster in Boston?
Yes. But plaster in Boston.
Okay, plaster in Boston. I would say that you can certainly drill into plaster in Boston. Yeah. I would say make sure you really like the photo. Make sure you don't want to move it. Yeah. And then when you do drill into it, use a nice drill bit on a low speed.
Okay.
And when you set your screw into it, especially if you're going to hit a stud, which I would suggest doing it, don't put a drywall molly in there because it's going to tear it all out eventually.
Yeah.
Don't use an impact driver.
Okay.
Because it's going to shake it.
Yeah.
And the wall is going to spider and it's going to crack. And then it's going to be, you know, more character.
Yeah.
More authenticity. Plaster wall.
Patina.
Yeah. Patina. Celebrate it. Yeah. Yeah. With words like
this
that.
This comes from my time in Denver. They have a lot of exterior. They have a lot of like interior, exterior walls that solid are plaster. Block. Solid block. Is that what it is? And for a lot of basements, a lot of like, you know, walls that are half in the ground and stuff. And so I've tried hanging, you know, friends' drapes, pictures at friends' houses because they're like, oh, you're handy, come do this. And I have spiderwebbed their walls and I have, you know, jacked them up. I was like, is there a right way to do this? So low speed seems to be my biggest
low
issue.
Low speed, have a nice drill bit and make sure you like nail that bit to fastener combo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stay within the tolerances.
Right. So you're not, it's tiny hole, big,
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't put a number six into a number three. It's not going to work out for you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, anyway, okay. That answers my selfish question. So
thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. On, absolute pleasure.
This is really
good,
fun.
Good luck with all the stuff you're doing. I'm excited about it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That'll be
fun to follow along. And how can we follow along with it?
Website New Age Artisans
or
Instagram at New Age Artisans is definitely kind of the best way. We're constantly putting stories up there.
Cool.
And basically all the initiatives that we're involved in they're there.
Sweet.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you guys.